are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, June 6, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, NSA report claims Russia attempted to mess with our voting system just days before the 2016 election. Meanwhile, Trump's biggest crisis, sheer incompetence. Will it save America? And are we on the verge of a mass exodus from the administration? Certainly, we are past the point where there is a mass introdus into the administration. Dems move left on health care as Nevada makes a major public option move, or attempts to do so. Meanwhile, Trump wants to privatize air traffic control. And another redistricting win in North Carolina. However, more disenfranchisement this time in Missouri. Eric Schneiderman says Exxon lied to shareholders about climate change. This and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, we are just days, not even days away. And we got to talk about this actually in the office. On Thursday, right, is the Comey. It's like, this is like the functional equivalent. About, I don't know, 25, 30 years ago, I spent a year working and hitching around Australia. And they have a version of the Kentucky Derby, right? A big horse race that everybody in the country seems to be aware of. Except for in Australia, they all take the day off. Like everybody. People don't care about horse racing. They just took the day off to either watch it or just go, I don't know, surfing at Bondi Beach or whatever it is that they did.
Sounds
remember,
great.
It
you
sounded
have so
great.
So many vacations.
Well, I mean, that was the nature of Australia, at least at that time. So people worked to live, as opposed to here, where we, you know, live to work. But be that as it may, the Comey testimony is starting to shape up that way. I mean, my understanding is the bars are open across the country early on Thursday.
In D.C., I heard specifically.
In D.C.,
yeah. That's a real D.C. thing.
But I imagine a lot of people are going to be glued to that. We need to talk about that because right now we have a book guest.
We do.
I mean, a guest book. Maybe we should do a pre-tape and just do a audible, as we call it.
Yes.
And then this report out, and I'm going to get to this in a moment, this report that was written up in The Intercept. And subsequent to that report, or I should say the write-up was subsequent to the arresting of the person who leaked this information from the NSA to The Intercept. We will get to that. And then really what is shaping up to be right now perhaps the most important dynamic when it comes to actual policy in this country, and that is the Trump administration's, it's one part this Russia, you know, investigations and drama, and probably two parts Trump's just sheer incompetence and toxicity, but there's a real quality to this country now that is like it's without a rudder, both domestically and internationally. And we will get to that, whether we're talking about Qatar or whether we're talking about white-collar crime pursuit or, frankly, just any administrative function by the state. And I would add also just the personal legal representation of Donald Trump, all that and more. But let's just take a moment to check in on our old friend, Pat Robertson, who is apparently still alive. And yeah, he's still alive.
Power of prayer.
Power of prayer. Barely kicking.
Original male vitality. Prayer.
As you know, Donald Trump has been attacking the mayor of London in the best of the tradition of coming to your allies' side.
Special relationship.
Right.
When hey, they Boris are Johnson, suck it.
Well,
that's what Obama did.
Right, exactly.
A long history. Who's the mayor of London? Get him on the phone.
I mean, just for a moment, just imagine Tony Blair coming out against Rudy Giuliani.
I think Rudy is a total loser. And I thought his performance after 9/11 was very overrated. Everyone's saying it.
Why would you
sad.
Put the HQ there, places?
He put HQ there because he and that roided up jockey, who was his security guard,
were both
railing their publisher.
Tell me
sad.
Something. When, since when does rocket fuel melt steel?
I'm not a believer in anything. I just want the truth. That's why I watch H.A. Goodman.
Here is the question.
Why would WikiLeaks put out information like that?
I distinctly remember some Jew saying, pull Tower 7. Pull Tower 7.
There was a whole van of Israelis, and they said, if you're Jewish, don't go in on the day of the attacks. Right. Now, no one wants to deal with the evidence.
I'm slightly off point, but...
No, I think we're on point.
Yes.
That's amazing.
I mean, that is exactly
9/11
the analogy.
Tony Blair is right. going to be recurring.
Right? And, I mean, it's just stunning. And we're already, you know, somewhat... I mean, there is a quality of like, I mean, I think most people understood at this point where we can just say, like, you see what we're dealing with over here? Except for, you know, the difference is that we're responsible for it. That said, let's tune in to Pat Robertson interviewing the Christian Broadcasting Network reporter Dale Hurd, who's going to give us an update on exactly what's going on with these recent terrorist attacks in the United Kingdom.
More coming in Britain or more coming in some other countries? Where, France or someplace else?
You know, yes, everywhere. I mean, in Britain, because even after this attack, you see the response from the left talking as if they're going to carry on as usual. They can't carry on as usual. Things have to change. But the left talks as if more people are going to have to die before something's done, because political correctness is so important to them. It's a core faith for them.
Dale, before you get off, let's define political correctness. What does it mean to you?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the case of Islam, it's a veneration of Islam. This barbaric religion, the left views as better than Western civilization because there's so much self-hatred of the West. You know, the West now in Britain and in Europe, it's a hollowed-out tree. Mm-hmm. There's no vigor in it. And it's as if they want to hand over their society to barbarians from Asia.
So this is really a death wish.
Yes, exactly.
Dale Hurd, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you can't keep somebody from wanting to die. It's one thing, you know, you can help them get better, but if they want to die, it's really hard. And if the Brits and other people in the Western Europe want to die, if they figure that a society has come to its end and they want to end it, Well, the Islam is certainly providing him a way to do it.
Mm. Now, listen, I just want to send a message to all my white friends in the UK and, in fact, Europe. Please stop wanting to die so much.
I would say your vigor is done. Embrace Islam. The only place with vigor remains.
The fascinating part about—I mean, I hate to take this seriously on any level, but the idea that something has to change, like, what is it exactly? I mean, here you have largely, you know, British citizens. You have people who were. The intelligence forces, the police forces were aware of these people. I mean, what exactly do you do? What is the change other than sitting there and talking about barbarians from Asia? Just full on bigotry.
That's the change. There you
we
go.
We just need to become
talking about
significantly more barbaric, I mean, or I should say racist,
yes,
towards the barbarians.
Yes.
And then, all of a sudden, they will, there will not be random crazy people.
Everyone knows that Al-Qaeda was a psyops operation by the NSA and the CIA. Meanwhile, the left wants to apologize for Islam, but they don't want to ask the serious questions.
It's interesting how much of the alt-right freakout, or I guess this guy's not alt-right, the right-wing freakout about these terror attacks.
Well,
London.
Wait a second. Let me just correct that for a moment.
Okay.
They're pre.
The alt-right is not alt.
They're right-right.
It is. This is where it came from. It's just now it's not cloaked in some form of pious Christianity. It's the same thing.
Okay, right.
If Pat Robertson was rising today, he would be doing Pepe Frogs and stupid memes
but
to couch this.
All their freak out, it has no conception of the fact that London went through the Blitz or something like that. Like, that guy's like, what are we going to ever do? We need to change something. And these t-shirts, the Keep Calm and Carry On stuff, was literally super popular for like a decade previously, and that's from the Blitz.
The Blitz an operation by the Bilderberg Group.
Imagine these guys during the Blitz freaking out that's sort of antithetical to the spirit.
I am willing to bet that during the era when like places like Harrods were blown up by the IRA, that Pat Robertson didn't have one of these stooges on, and they're talking about the barbarians who come from Northern Ireland.
Right. They would have been fine because they kept calm and carried on, and they also advocated for the genocide of Indians, Kenyans, and Irish. So that was cool then.
And Sam Cedar says he saw the plane. Meanwhile, Sex and the City was funded by George Soros. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous.
All right, I want to get to this NSA report and then get on to the story of Trump losing... not being able... attract is not the right word.
He's going to answer.
Talk about a hollowed out administration. That's what we're dealing with. And the Republicans are starting to get worried about it. And I think hopefully Democrats are going to take advantage of it a little bit. But first, I should remind you that today is June 6th. You have now something like 13 days left to get your dad a Father's Day gift. Are you looking for the perfect Father's Day gift? Because if you're not looking for the perfect one, don't listen to what I'm about to say. If you're looking for like a somewhat perfect, turn off your podcast.
That was very Bill Clinton. I like that.
Let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how for only $49.99, you can get my limited time Father's Day package. When you go to omahasteaks.com, enter my code REPORT in the search bar. You got to put it in the search bar. And get 80% off. Two filet mignons. This is what the normal price. Because the whole idea is that once you try this stuff, you're going to end up going back. So they want you to try it. Two filet mignons. Two top sirloins. Two chicken fried steaks. Four chicken fried steaks. Four boneless pork chops. Four burgers. Four jumbo franks. a 12-ounce package of all beef meatballs, 1 pound of fries. I can't even say this. 4 caramel apple tartlets. They were delicious. 1 Omaha steak seasoning packet. Plus, get 4 additional burgers free. All this for less than $50. If you're looking for, it's a great deal. If you're looking for a convenience, you know, you put it in your freezer, you can blow it out in one barbecue. I don't know how you would do that. It's conceivable, a big one. I mean, I don't know that many people, period. But if you're looking for a convenient and quick Father's Day gift, go to omahasteaks.com. Enter my code REPORT in the search bar. Add the family gift pack to your cart and get an 80% savings. Grab your dad, fire up the grill. Meanwhile, you've heard me say it many times before. People ask me about this all the time. I get people ask me about my mattress more than just about anything else that I'm asked. It's weird. And now that I think about it, it makes me feel bad. I'm uncomfortable. People don't even say, like, how you doing? They like, is the Casper really good? Honestly, they say, is the Casper really good? And it is. It's an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. Supportive memory foams create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink, just the right bounce. Here's the best part. Try Casper for free for 100 nights, risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they pick it up and they'll refund you everything. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it. Unless, of course, you have children, in which case it may be closer to an eighth. Free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada with over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars. It's quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. You know our Casper mattress is our favorite one in the house. If I had known better, I wouldn't have gotten it for Saul. But he needed one when he was becoming a big boy. Now we just got to line it with like pee protectors.
It's so cute.
But it is. It's the most comfortable mattress in the house.
He deserved it.
You get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/majority using offer code majority. Terms and conditions apply. And lastly, my anniversary is coming up soon. I should go for this again because during Mother's Day, this was a huge hit in my house. Have you ever forgotten an anniversary? If you're not nodding yes, you're probably lying. Mine's complicated. We actually got married on 2 different days. It's weird. We had 2 ceremonies. I don't even want to get into the story, but I can tell you the beauty is I forget the first one, and then you remember the second one. It's true.
You betray yourself.
Nikki got some pro flowers for Mother's Day. She loved them. They were huge. Right now, Pro Flowers has a special offer for our listeners. Get $10 off your purchase of $29 or more by going to proflowers.com and entering the code CEDAR. That's SEDER. That's my last name. Holy crap. Is that a coincidence? CEDAR, SEDER, at checkout. The deal works for like their best-selling gifts like the 100 Blooms Bouquet, a dozen red roses, or even their totally unique plant gifts. Whatever you choose, Pro Flower Bouquets are guaranteed to stay fresh for 7 days or your money back. Not to mention, their website, super easy to use. You schedule your delivery any time or date, get back to your day. It's a no-brainer gift for any occasion or even no occasion at all. Really, that's what you should do. You have someone in your life that you love or like moderately, just go to the website right now. Boom, you're done. Do yourself a favor. Meanwhile, help out the show. Support Pro Flowers. You got a birthday or an anniversary coming up, or just like, hello, how are you? Or I swiped right on you, and so I might as well send you some flowers.
Yo,
is that how
no,
it works?
No. That's very dangerous advice for people. I just swiped right on you, and now I would like your home address to send you flowers? No.
Oh, I don't know what that means. I'm not exactly sure. This is all after my time.
Hi, can I get you flowers?
You get $10 off your purchase of $29 or more at ProFlowers. Go to proflowers.com. Enter code CEDAR, S-E-D-E-R, at checkout. Hurry, this deal will not last long.
I'd just like to say that that did happen to me one time. I went on one date with this guy, and then he found my work address and sent me the weirdest flowers arrangement.
That's creepy.
Don't do it, guys.
Don't do that. All right. All right, let's get to this. The Intercept had a piece up yesterday afternoon. And I mean, there's a couple of different stories associated with this, not the least of which that its source, its apparent source, was arrested and will be charged with espionage, I believe. There's also the element of the Intercept being rather skeptical about these things.
Oh, yeah.
And I think clearly you should be skeptical about all of this. But there are some realities here. The reality is that there was an NSA document. The reality is it was leaked to the Intercept. And it appears that there was at least an attempt by Russia to not influence the election by psyops or whatever that is called, you know, publicly, you know, by shaping perception of the candidates. But according to the Intercept, Russian military intelligence executed a cyber attack on at least one U.S. voting software supplier and sent spear phishing emails to more than 100 local election officials just days before last November's presidential election. This is according to a highly classified intelligence report, like I say, obtained by The Intercept. Now, here's what you have to be clear about. There is no assessment that the Russians actually successfully did anything other than perhaps gain access to, I think, one computer. Will you turn off that microphone or just press it because I'm getting your typing and whatnot? No, it's weird. Something's coming through. But what is clear is that there was an attempt. And the real concern here is not so much that there was an attempt that could have dramatically changed vote tallies, though there are hypotheticals how that could have happened. But the main concern seems to be that it's possible that you could mess with voter registration files and basically create havoc in the voting areas, which would lead to people basically being disenfranchised from their votes. Now, there's two separate issues here. One is, going forward, there's a clear vulnerability that needs to be addressed. And this is a vulnerability that we are completely susceptible to. You'll recall that back in February, the House Administration Committee, in a 6-3 vote, which was a long party line, 6 Republicans, 3 Democrats, voted to eliminate the Election Assistance Commission, which helps states run elections, and it's the only federal agency charged with making sure voting machines can't be hacked. So we have a clear vulnerability, and at the very least, according to the NSA and this document, an attempt to exploit one part of that vulnerability. The other is that Russia clearly was interested in not just influencing our election, but perhaps shaping the outcome. It didn't seem like they got there. Russia General Staff Main Intelligence Directorate actors. This is the document. Executed cyber espionage operations against a named U.S. company in August 2016. This is evidently to obtain information on election-related software and hardware solutions. They seem to have basically had two things. And this attack, this cyber attack, was not terribly sophisticated. It's more or less what you keep telling your parents not to click on one of those links. They did set up, and this is why I think, and because I don't know what Russian General Staff Main Intelligence Directorate actors means. But to the extent we've speculated about this stuff, I imagine the Venn diagram that you draw between Russian General Staff Main Intelligence Directorate actors and guys in Eastern Europe who steal credit cards or passwords of other commercial sites, I would imagine that Venn diagram is not totally overlapping, but pretty darn close. And
subcontract for plenty of things. Like,
well, of course, know, that's my point.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's actors. It doesn't necessarily mean that they work in the building. The CIA does the same thing. And, I mean, I don't know if they do the same thing with the same people, but they, a lot of this stuff gets outsourced. And, I mean, I get these phishing things, I don't know, it seems like one or two times a week, where they'll create a fake Google site. They will convince you that you need to go re-enter your credentials. They get your credentials. They then go in and mock up. They supposedly broke into this company. And there's reports that the company is this company, VR. It's one that makes software. It's not, nobody's clear, but there's speculation. And as to who the company is. And what they did is they went in and then posed as basically representatives of VR systems, and then posed as VR systems people to a local county and I think county election officials, 112 of them. And it is unclear at this time how many of them got pulled in and what they would have had access to if they got access. The NSA analysis does not draw any conclusions as to whether or not the interference had any effect on the election's outcome. The assessment concludes with a high confidence that the Kremlin ordered an extensive multi-pronged propaganda effort to undermine public faith in U.S. democratic process, denigrate Clinton, and harm her electability and potential presidency. It did not attempt to assess what effect the Russian efforts had on the election. Russian intelligence obtained and maintained access to elements of multiple U.S. state or local electoral boards. I mean, much of this had been broadly reported by CNN some time ago, I believe. They focused on parts of the system directly connected to the voter registration process. As described by the classified NSA report, the Russian plan was simple. Pose as an e-voting vendor, trick local government employees into opening Microsoft Word documents invisibly tainted with potent malware that could give hackers full control over the infected computers. There were seven potential victims at the company. Like I say, largely believed to be VR systems. I don't know if that's correct or not. The NSA assessed that this phase of the spear phishing operation was likely launched on either October 31st or November 1 and sent spear phishing emails to 122 email addresses. So once they got into VR systems back in like August or September, they waited 2 months until the couple of days before the election and then sent out fake emails from a supposed VR systems or a company like that to 122 email addresses associated with named local government organizations who were probable officials involved in the management of voter registration systems. The NSA is uncertain about the results of the attack, and they're not sure whether the aforementioned spear phishing deployment successfully compromised the intended victims and what potential data could have been accessed by the cyber actor. Interestingly, apparently in December, Obama said that in early September, he reached out to Putin and said, stop doing this. And they thought that he had, and apparently they don't. This is information that the NSA secured in March. So that is the primary story. And the value of this, like I say, is twofold. One, it means going forward, there needs to be concerted effort by the federal government to figure out how to maintain the integrity of our voter file system and our voting systems. Not roll it back the other way as Republicans have done. Secondly, it just simply establishes, and maybe you don't believe this NSA document. I mean, I don't think it's an illegitimate posture to be highly skeptical of what the NSA puts out, even if it's supposedly leaked by someone who is not necessarily on board with the NSA agenda. But it further provides further evidence that Russia wanted to influence our election. And just to be clear, if Russia intended to influence our election, it would put them squarely with where the United States has been in influencing other countries' elections, A, and B, my sense is that to the extent that there was any impact by the Russians, the impact was greater for a number of other factors, ranging from the Comey letter through towards Clinton's strategy, tactics, and that she was obviously a flawed candidate to begin with in many respects. But nevertheless, the idea that this whole Russia thing is some type of complete fabrication, I think, is getting harder and harder to defend. Another story associated with this is that the FBI has arrested a 25-year-old woman named Reality Lee Winner. Reality Winner. Reality.
It's very Thomas Pynchon.
Yes, I would say. Apparently, this is what happened. And she has been charged under the Espionage Act. The FBI affidavit filed with her arrest said she's worked for Pluribus International Corporation at a government facility in Georgia since February 13th. She is charged with providing a copy of a highly confidential, top secret NSA document. And here's how they found out it was her. some of this is The Intercept apparently not using best practices. The Intercept, when they were going to the NSA to get comments on the story that they were preparing to write on this document, showed the NSA a copy of the document they had, which apparently was a copy in and of itself. The copy of the document, as opposed to being an original document, the copy showed some type of crease in the paper, which indicated that it was a copy, and there were specific signatures left by the copy machine. I don't know if it's expressly for this purpose, but it's the case. NSA's auditing system showed that six people had printed out the report, including Ms. Winner. Investigators then examined the computers of those six people and found that Ms. Winner had been in email contact with the news outlet, this being The Intercept, but the other five had not. So, look, here's one thing that you should know. If you're ever going to leak something to any outlet, you don't email them at any time. At any time. And in fact, if you've ever just casually emailed them years before, look for a different outlet. You don't use email. There are plenty of sources, or I should say, publications, online publications, that use things like WhatsApp, or will use some type of like a virtual Dropbox. Take the time to look for those. Don't look for them on your own computer. You go to like an internet cafe, or you go to a friend's house. Well, I mean, if you're just looking for that stuff at a friend's house, when you're over there, you're noodling around, that's not a big deal. But you've got to be much more careful. The Espionage Act carries a sentence of up to 10 years in prison, though conventional leak cases, according to the Times, have been typically resulted in prison terms of 1 to 3 years. Understand that this pursuit of a leaker by the Trump administration is not new and without precedent. In fact, you don't have to go very far. Well, the precedent basically started under the Obama administration. It's one thing to go after leakers. It's another to charge them with the Espionage Act. And my understanding is that is, there may have been one case of it during the Bush administration, but it was more or less kept alive during the Obama administration and expanded the use. So this is another example of why you don't want to give a president, even one that you trust, these powers, and not even necessarily powers, but you don't want to normalize it when they do this, because we have a habit in this country of electing other people after 4 or 8 years. And sometimes that guy doesn't, or a gal, doesn't end up being the person you want them to be. Yeah. So you've basically given Donald Trump, like, you know, there's no outrage that's going to be generated about this woman going to jail for any period of time, because basically the Obama administration made it impossible to be outraged at the idea that someone is leaking this information. I mean, that's basically it. She mailed it, apparently, to The Intercept after removing the report on May 9th. Winner's real mistake, again, was emailing with the Intercept's reporters from a work computer.
She was apparently asking for podcast transcripts for one of their podcasts.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, you just don't want any contact whatsoever. And apparently they went and visited her at her home and questioned her, and she confessed to knowingly violating her security clearances. I mean, so there it is. Very strange indeed. And the long and short of it is, you know, it's unclear what we're ultimately going to know about any of the Russian involvement. The idea of collusion to me still seems rather far-fetched. I just don't understand. You'd have to be really sloppy. Now, it's possible Donald Trump would be read into something like this, but it's not, you know, the idea that the Trump organization does not know anybody except for Russia to go and do spear phishing campaigns to get people's emails seems a little far-fetched to me. Nevertheless, there are certain realities that are helpful about this. And from my perspective, it's stories like this. Politico reports yesterday, President Trump's legislative director is acknowledging that the ongoing investigations into Russian interference in the 2016 election are overwhelming his legislative agenda.
What we've been saying.
Sorry about that.
That's what we've been saying.
So sorry. So sorry. There's no doubt that keeping members focused on investigations detracts from our legislative agenda, detracts from what we're trying to deliver to the American people, said Mark Short, Trump's director of legislative affairs, in briefing with reporters on Monday night. Now, look, he could be lying and just covering for their own tremendous incompetence. And let's not forget, this isn't just about the White House's incompetence. The Republican caucus in the House and the Senate is also largely dysfunctional in many respects. Largely. Not totally. The House still did pass one of the most horrendous assaults on American healthcare, I think, maybe that we've ever seen. I mean, it could be pretty unprecedented. And they could very well pass something in the Senate. If the investigations into this and the tangential investigations into obstruction of justice in any way inhibit the ability of the Republican Party to put millions of children in a situation where they don't have health care insurance, just access maybe to emergency rooms, 8 hours if you want to take the kid in because he's got a sore throat while you sit there and wait. If it in any way inhibits the destruction of our healthcare system, if in any way inhibits the ability of the Trump administration to cut food stamps, to all for billions of dollars of cuts to the wealthiest Americans, to cut our governmental services, then I am for it. I am 100% for it. I do not have any great fears that we are going to invade Russia or attack Russia. Anything that slows down the legislative process, I am in favor of. According to this piece, Republicans now face the prospect of going into the 2018 midterms with little to show voters. Obamacare is still law of the land. Funding for a border wall with Mexico is bogged down in partisan fighting. I think Obamacare is still very much in jeopardy. Trump's budget proposal was dead on arrival. The White House is way behind schedule on sending executive branch nominees to the Senate for consideration. We'll talk about that in a moment. Today, Trump is set to meet with Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, and Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House. to discuss what's going on in Congress. My hope is that Donald Trump spends the entire meeting reminding them that he won the Electoral College and talking about how he doesn't like Russia. Short also warned that Trump will play hardball with Democrats and Republican moderates on his spending priorities coming in the fall. There is, and we will talk about this as well, there's reason to believe we're going to have a government shutdown in September. The House Budget Committee is expected to unveil a budget plan in the next few weeks, although there are huge splits inside the GOP over those who want to boost Pentagon funding and spending hardliners who want to cut to government. That doesn't address what's going on with Democrats. In the Senate, they haven't had any appropriations meetings. They're way, way, way behind schedule. It gets worse for Trump when you talk about actually staffing the government. Here's some numbers in terms of how the Trump administration is doing. You'll recall that Obama had trouble sitting a lot of people. That was because of Republican obstruction. The numbers weren't anywhere near this. And the striking feature is not that they're being obstructed by Democrats. There are 559 key positions requiring Senate confirmation. There is no nominee for 441 of those positions. No nominee. We're in month six now of the Trump administration, and they have not come up with 441 names to staff key positions in the government. There are 15 who are awaiting nomination. In other words, Trump said, well, we're going to hire this guy, but they didn't formally nominate. There were 64 who were formally nominated and 39 confirmed. That's stunning. They had not been able to appoint, even to name anybody. It's unbelievable. The Trump administration's trying to blame the Office of Government Ethics, which vets these people. But they say, we can't review reports until we receive them. Once we receive them, the OGE has been moving these reports faster than we did in the 2009 transition. So their turnaround time is shorter, but they're just not getting any reports. Thune, this is a South Dakota Senator John Thune, speculated the administration may be intentionally slow in naming nominees because it does not want to fill those positions in the first place. More than 1,200 positions throughout the federal government must be confirmed by the Senate. 559 of those, like I say, are key administration positions. He's only named 117 of them. 39 confirmed, 64 formally nominated, 15 awaiting nomination. God knows how many of the ethics reports they've got in. This has been a total failure. And now, and I will say this, I went back and forth with McKay Coppins and another guy on Twitter about this. You'll recall Steve Bannon, in addressing CPAC, I think it was in February, said their number one agenda with their cabinet appointees is the destruction of the administrative state. Mm-hmm. I would also argue that in not appointing these key positions, you are corroding and degrading the administrative state. And it's the easiest way to do it if you're completely incompetent. I mean, a really competent degradation and destruction of the administrative state would require you to find candidates who are both well-versed with how government works, but also particularly hostile towards it. Like a guy like Scott Pruitt, who is perfect if you want to destroy the EPA. But there's just not that many guys out there who are so obvious. And by guys, I mean gals too.
No, you might mean guys.
Well, probably guys in this administration. And so the next best thing you do is just let them sort of wither on the vine. You have people in these divisions who are completely frozen. They can't make their budgets. They don't know what personnel they're going to get. They don't know where the office is going strategically. I spoke to a buddy of mine very recently, former U.S. attorney, who says that the DOJ, U.S. attorneys, like white-collar crime, forget it. No resources going there. They're getting nothing. He incidentally also said that the guy who went with Mueller, is a quote, a beast.
Yeah, really. Real beast.
But
sure.
The point is that you have this situation where key positions in our government are not staffed. And here is the danger. On top of the atrophy that's going on in these agencies, I mean, on one hand, it's probably better than having someone who is actively hostile towards the existence of the agency in these positions, because they're not necessarily alienating people. If you go back to the interview we did with Sam Bagenstos, he talks about being at the DOJ before and after the Bush administration and how it demoralized people there, and they specifically tried to get career people out. But here's the other problem. From time to time, we have disasters in this country. Sandy, Katrina, 9/11, some type of grid outage. We have people in these agencies, and these agencies function, and sometimes they function at a relatively low level of activity, but they are there and have institutional knowledge so that when there's a crisis, nobody's going around trying to figure out how shit works. They're just doing it. And we could be heading into, you know, some type of really mass experiment where what happens if there is an Eastern Seaboard power outage that would otherwise last a couple of days or a day, but now may last longer. What happens if we need emergency services in, I don't know, in North Carolina because of a hurricane? I mean, the scenarios always come up and we talk about them for a little bit and then we stop talking about them because the government responds and that's it. You can't necessarily take that for granted. So a real danger in addition to what it's doing to our government. I mean, you know, as these services, you degrade these agencies, they provide less services, and you begin to make it much easier for Republicans to demonize government in the first place. Now, the only upshot to this is that not only can the Trump administration not find people they want to destroy these agencies, they can't find people to do anything. This story just broke this morning. Four top law firms turned down requests to represent Trump. Now, I can tell you, my understanding is that when Mueller becomes special counsel, and when he hires his team, all of those guys associated with that team immediately get swamped with emails from former prosecutors saying, hey, man, if you need somebody, I'm here. The opposite thing is happening with defending Trump. Top lawyers with at least four major law firms have rebuffed the White House overtures to represent President Trump in the Russia investigations. The president's chief lawyer, who's now in charge of the case, is Mark E. Kasowitz. Now, you remember they were talking about building a war room like Clinton had in during the impeachment? Apparently, that fell apart. Who knew that people would have trouble figuring out how to work with Corey Lewandowski? So all of this is going to fall on Donald Trump's personal lawyer, Mark E. Kasowitz. Cohen, and here's
what's
the
going
other
on
problem.
With Cohen?
Well, Cohen represents implicated? Him in other deals.
Says who?
Not in litigation or anything like that. But here's the problem with Cohen. There was a story about Cohen. Well, here's the problem with Cohen. Yeah. Apparently, Donald Trump does not pay the people around him very well. Like, everybody thought that Cohen would be this millionaire because he's working for a billionaire, supposedly. Apparently, he had to have a bunch of side jobs. Not like, you know, driving an Uber, but he got into deals that there are some concern.
He reps like strip clubs and like Paramus.
It's not quite like that, but he's doing these other outside things that people are concerned may be the source of some of what's going on
here. They say we're violating decency ordinance with no strip club. Can you help us, Mr. Cohen?
So this is what Mark E. Kasowitz has been doing. He has been representing Trump in businesses and public relations disputes, often with the threats of countersuits and menacing public statements. But he has little experience dealing with complex congressional and Justice Department investigations that are inevitably influenced by media coverage and public opinion. So in other words, the people at these four firms that were in this story, including Brendan Sullivan of Williams & Connolly, Ted Olson. You remember Ted Olson's name, right?
Yep.
Former solicitor, I think, under Bush.
Bush the second.
Of Gibson, Dunn, and Crutcher. Paul Clement, also former solicitor, I think, under Obama. And Mark Phillip of Kirkland & Ellis. Robert Gioffre of Sullivan & Cromwell. These are guys who understand how Congress works, how the DOJ works. That's why when you're looking for a defense attorney and you're getting prosecuted by the U.S. government, you're looking for a former U.S. prosecutor. Not a guy whose claim to fame is sending mean letters to people and saying to, you know, plumbers in Queens, like, you're not going to get that.
I mean, the way he stiffed that guy at the... So on the window pane installations, great prep for this.
The lawyers and their firms cited a variety of factors in choosing not to take on the president as a client.
Do they have to do that?
Do they have to mention
to cite,
it?
Cite
no,
reasons?
No, okay. No, but they all probably do by saying like, look, oh, I would love to, president. But however, they'll say things like, we don't have the resources right now. Others mentioned potential conflicts with other clients in their firm, such as financial institutions that have already received subpoenas relating to this. But a consistent theme, this is according to a source, was the concern about whether the president would accept advice of his lawyers and refrain from public statements and tweets that undercut his position. And the other one was, they don't think they're going to get paid.
Those are both quote, valid concerns.
The concerns were the guy won't pay and he won't listen.
I mean, you know, other you're right, factors, you're right.
Other factors were that it would kill recruitment for the firms to be publicly associating themselves with representing the president and jeopardize the firm's relationships with other clients. Donald Trump is so toxic that even people who professionally represent the most reprehensible people in the country, responsible for millions of people being kicked out of their homes, responsible for foreclosing on people, responsible for putting out products that kill people, they will not represent Donald Trump.
Everyone has a line. Apparently.
Yeah. And I have a feeling it's because they also think they're not going to get paid.
I think that's the main one. It's going to end up being like, hi, my name's Antonio fucking Figueroni. I run the best
All right.
Personal injury fraud firm in Jackson Heights, Queens. And Mr. Trump's not going to cooperate with you on your Rust investigation. They just do it the way they stiff contract. It's just like, yeah, he doesn't recall that conversation, so sorry. We're not going to be able to get those documents to you, Congress. And if you don't like it, you know what you could do? You could jerk off to a picture of Melania, who's not your wife.
Maybe you could sit out there and maybe there'll be an inflatable rat out in front of your freaking Congress.
This is related to Obamacare.
Oh, wait a second. I'm sorry. Are those cement trucks honking too loudly? Oh, I could probably take care of that.
Did a couple of homeless guys go to the bathroom in your stairwell? Yeah, a couple of old tricks from his slumlord days. I don't think you can get that information on Putin hacking the voting machines anytime soon, you fucking Stugatz. Hey, Mr. Trump, it's only $300. Why haven't you paid me yet?
So Obamacare, not only, so it's still the law of the land, but because nothing is being done to, transform the problems with it and people are and places are just pulling out of the marketplace. I assume this is the reason, the problems that people complain about in the first place are only getting
worse,
extraordinarily worse. I got a letter in the mail yesterday saying that my premium, I'm on Obamacare, would go up by 34%. And it went up by, I think over 2 years, that would make it a 60% increase.
The biggest problem now is that because the Trump administration has basically just punted this lawsuit for 3 months and has put the subsidies in jeopardy, the insurance companies are saying we're either going to leave the exchange or we're going to jack up prices because we don't know. We're going into 2018 where there could theoretically be no subsidies for these, and we could either lose a bunch of customers or money and or both, and so they're covering themselves. Yeah, no, it's
right.
A real
not
disaster.
Only that, but they're going to be opportunistic no matter what, and it's just...
This is part of the problem, is that they are attempting on purpose to destroy
exactly,
the bumper.
Yeah.
All right, but let me get back to this. The good news in terms of the staffing standpoint is, and this is like a... I remember there was one guy during the Iraq war, and I think he was, I don't know if he was an ambassador, it escapes me now, from Italy or somewhere from the southern Mediterranean, I can't remember, who resigned in protest of the Iraq war. But this should be a great tradition for Donald Trump to start. Because you see it in Britain more, you see it in other countries. The number two diplomat at the U.S. Embassy in Beijing resigned Monday, telling staff his conscience would not permit him to formally notify the Chinese that the United States is withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accord. David Rank, a career Foreign Service officer of 27 years, he had been acting ambassador until recently. Iowa Governor Terry Branstad was confirmed. Rank held a town meeting with embassy employees to explain that he had offered his resignation and it had been accepted. Because he was the head of the embassy until Branstad arrives, it was Rank's responsibility to deliver a formal notification of the U.S. intention to withdraw from the climate pact. And according to a State Department official, Rank was unwilling to deliver that notification. He told his staff that as a parent, a patriot, and a Christian, he could not in good conscience play a role in implementing Trump's decision to withdraw from the Paris Accords. Under the Obama administration, climate change was incorporated into the daily business of diplomacy at every level. Rank was known for his personal concern about the environment. Career diplomats like Rank have been overseeing embassies around the world because of how slowly the Trump administration's been nominating political appointees as ambassadors. You'll also note he hasn't resigned, but it'd be nice. Louis Lukens, the acting ambassador at the U.S. Embassy in Britain, broke ranks with Trump over his criticism of London Mayor Sadiq Khan, saying that Khan had shown strong leadership in responding to the London Bridge terrorist attack. I hope that Donald Trump spurs this new tradition where people of conscience working in the government will resign. And really what we need is George Soros or something like that step up and say, like, I'll give you a stipend if you do. You know, that's because right. A lot of people, you know, worry about their careers and their money. And I don't think that's going to happen. But it'll be interesting to see if that acting ambassador from China is joined by some other more high-profile Trump officials. You'll recall last week there was a story in the Daily Beast that H.R. McMaster's former colleagues were being critical of how Donald Trump was treating McMaster. That story, to me, looks like H.R. McMaster beginning to basically gas up the getaway car. You know, one take could be he's trying to send a message to the president, hey, you got to knock it off. But that's not where I would imagine that leak being, to be honest with you. It seems to me that he is basically signaling, because remember, McMaster would have to resign from the military and have to give up his shot at 4 stars. Basically throw away his entire career, probably 10 years before he wanted to. Just to get away from Trump. And then you see this story in Politico, which again also reads to me like a gassing up the getaway car story. When President Donald Trump addressed NATO leaders during his debut overseas trip a little more than a week ago, he surprised and disappointed European allies. But who he also disappointed and surprised was his own top national security officials by failing to include the language reaffirming the so-called Article 5 provision in his speech. Apparently, H.R. McMaster, Defense Secretary James Mattis, and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson all supported Trump reaffirming Article 5 and were told that he would. This is according to 5 different sources. They thought it was included, and a White House aide even told the New York Times the day before that the line was definitely included. They had the right speech. It was cleared through McMaster, said a source briefed by National Security Council officials in the immediate aftermath of the NATO meeting. As late as that same morning, it was the right one. So in other words, Trump, or someone very, 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 very close to Trump on that trip, took that line out. When you start to see these stories that are outlining the legitimate reasons for disgruntlement by top officials, you have to remember, you have to wonder where this is coming from and why. Why are you able to know this? We didn't hear this stuff in the Obama administration. Right? And even in retrospect, we start to realize like there was a lot of people in there who didn't want the Iran deal. There was a lot of people in there who wanted to go into Syria. Clearly, Obama was bucking up against a lot of people there. We never heard any of that. We're hearing this now because people are laying the groundwork to not be judged harshly when they resign. I don't know when that's going to happen, but I would be very shocked to not see McMaster the first guy to go. He is the one, it seems to me, who I don't know. We'll see. But it's very interesting to see this type of, these are all leaks. They are not coming from the deep state. They are coming from within the White House. In the fun half, we'll talk about the supposedly growing dissatisfaction with Jeff Sessions in the White House.
Yes. I mean, that's his pattern. It's so obvious. I mean, everybody
you don't
said
seem
that.
You really just don't seem to hate Puerto Ricans enough.
You know, Jeff, I hired you with the premise, and I get it. Everyone hates the blacks, but everyone hates the Muslims. But
you
got to
think out of the box.
I mentioned the Puerto Ricans. It's like you don't even know who they are.
It's like you don't even care.
Well, Mr. President, I saw West Side Story. I mean, I hate the PRs as much.
You know what, Jeff? Get out.
Get out.
I'm just tired of you. You're always trying to...
What's the next line? When you're a jet what?
Yeah, exactly.
When you're a jet what?
Exactly.
When you're a jet what? All right, get out.
Get out. Stephen can answer that. Why is it that the only people who have any competence around me are freaking Jews?
We gotta
so
take
weird.
We
but Steve take a quick does break. Not like that.
Folks... It's your support that makes this show possible. By becoming a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com, you can become a member of the Majority Report. Honestly, your membership is what makes the free show possible. And as a way of saying thank you, we give you extra content. If you don't want that extra content, don't take it. Support this daily show, folks, by becoming a member for pennies a day. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. And if you buy your crap through Amazon or Jet, do so at our link at majorityreportkickback.com. Going to take a quick break. Oh, and we've got some, we don't quite have that news for members about that behind-the-scenes documentary. We're going to have it for tomorrow. All right, folks, we'll be right back. See you in the fun half, 646-257-3920.